This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Okay, this is the title track, actually.
Steve Earle isn't just a singer-songwriter, he's a master storyteller. And it's no wonder, because he's got some great material to draw from, which we'll hear about in a minute. He'll be performing this Sunday at the Wilbur Theater here in Boston. His 15th studio album is called The Low Highway, and when he joined us recently, he played the title track.
Traveling out on the low highway to 3,000 miles to the Frisco Bay, across the rivers wild and the lonesome plains, up a coast and down, back again. Saw empty houses on dead-end streets, people lining up for something.
Steve Earle is an American folk troubadour, a protege of the songwriters Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark, and a disciple of the great Woody Guthrie. He's done some time in jail, been in the movies, and he's a noisy political activist. But he always returns to his music and the stories of real people and their struggles.
Windows down, listening. Wheels turning around on the asphalt, same every sound is a prophecy. I heard an old man grumble, a young girl cry, brick wall crumble and a white dove fly. Call for justice and cry for peace. The voice of reason and the roar of the beast. Every mile was a prayer I prayed as I rolled down the low highway.
That's Steve Earle with the title track off his latest album, Low Highway. He joins us from New York City. Steve Earle, great to have you. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, thank you. That song, it's weird. It's like it's one of those what you see out the window songs.
It really is. It's beautiful. Tell me about that song, because in it there's a lot of sadness about where we are in America, but I get the impression that you also like what you see when you roll across the country.
Well, for one thing, I feel really fortunate to have a job based on what I see out there. And I feel really fortunate that people in times like these will spend money to come out and see me play, which is what my main job is. And this job that I do was Bob Dylan invented it, you know, and kind of while he was in the process of sort of creating himself in the image of Woody Guthrie. But we all do it based on music that has its roots in the Depression.
Yeah.
And telling stories that have their roots in the Great Depression. And none of us, including Bob, witnessed that firsthand. And it just dawned on me that what I was looking out the window at, I was looking at what something very similar to what Woody saw, and doing this firsthand for the first time in my life.
Hmm. So Woody looked out the window and saw the Depression, as you say.
He saw it out of a boxcar, and I saw it out of a bus that cost more than most people's houses. We need to keep that part of it.
No, that's an important detail. But is it still, I mean, I know we're not in the midst of a Great Depression, but you write about people who are battling
out
there.
These times are pretty tough, and things are getting better for some people, but they're not getting better that fast for everybody. And I think the gap's getting bigger. And the people that are recovering right now are people that were okay, that never have really suffered and didn't in the last Depression. I don't see much difference between this and the 30s.
Interesting. Steve Earle, I love the way you write. I always have. You pack so much into these short verses. I mean, met a man with a rifle in his hand, been away to battle in a distant land, taught him how to hate, taught him how to kill. Now he's out on the road with a hole to fill. It's powerful stuff. How do these songs pour out of you? I guess I'm asking about sort of the writing process, or is it hard work? It did.
This one did. This one was pretty, you know, it wrote itself, kind of wrote itself. There's other stuff that's harder. I mean, and it doesn't mean that, you know, I used to maybe make the mistake, I think, now in retrospect, of when things didn't come really easily, I would throw them away. I assumed that certain spirits and gods were not going to cooperate with me, and I would just bail on something. But Invisible took 3 years to write, longer than any song I've ever written. I had it for the last record. I think it wanted to be on this record. I think it fits in with this record. I knew what it was about, the basic story I wanted to tell, which was neighbors of mine, really, people that live in my neighborhood.
What did you want to tell about them? I mean, what's the story?
There's a church a block from my apartment. When I'm in town, I walk past it every day going to the gym. There's a soup kitchen in that church now. I've seen people lined up there, and they come out of the basement, and they got, you know, styrofoam containers sometimes and cups. And it dawned on me that what was happening was it had become visible to me because the line was longer. There's always been that charity. By the same token, most homeless people are invisible because they're women with children, but those people become invisible to us because we choose not to see them, just to be able to walk past them every day.
When it comes to politics, you describe yourself to the left of Chairman Mao, which I think is a pretty fitting description. And you've been outspoken on all kinds of issues, including the death penalty. You've corresponded with a number of people on death row. You've witnessed an execution. Do you think, are you hopeful that your work as a singer, a songwriter, a troubadour, sort of chips away at these issues in a way to make change?
I know it does. I mean, for one thing, the death penalty, and it's not because of my songs, it's because of everybody that's opposed to death penalty. The death penalty is going away. It's dying, you know, and it was a very tiny movement when I first got involved in it. It was 7 or 8 of us on the steps of the Supreme Court, you know, once a year, and outside of prison every time somebody was executed in Texas or Florida or Virginia. Now, for a lot of reasons, people are starting to figure out that it's something that just doesn't work, and it's going well. I've had people, as far as what my part of it is, I've lost count of the number of people that have come up to me and said that a song that they heard me sing or something they heard me say before I sang a song or after I sang a song changed their mind about the death penalty. Now, I don't need any more justification for what I do than that.
You wrote an amazing song about this for the movie Dead Man Walking called Ellis Unit 1. That song, Ellis Unit 1, what I found so powerful about it was it didn't come at the death penalty debate in the typical way. You actually focused on what it does to the people who have to carry it out.
Well, I've seen them fight like lions, boys. I've seen them go like lambs. And I've helped to drag them when they could not stand. And I've heard their mamas crying when they heard that big door slam. And I've seen the victim's family holding hands. Last night I dreamed that I woke up with straps across my chest. And something cold and black pumped through my lungs. And even Jesus couldn't save me, though I know he did his best. But he don't live on Ellis Unit 1.
I witnessed an execution, and the biggest surprise to me was the empathy I had for the people that had to participate in that execution just because it was their job.
Steve, you grew up in Texas. You spent a lot of years in Nashville. Now you're living in New York. Can I ask why you left Nashville, the cradle of country music? It seemed like a good fit at one point.
I mean, it's not a singer-songwriter-friendly town. It never has been. It was kind of even hard. Nashville and Hank Williams didn't even get along that well. I was played on country radio when I started out. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I owe people an apology because some people really were invested in the idea that I was some sort of genuine article neo-traditionalist country singer. And I wasn't. I was always a folky.
I get it that you call yourself a folky, but you're more than that. The last time I saw you in Boston a few years ago, you were playing at the Paradise Rock Club. You did a great concert, and then you came out and you did an encore, and you sort of blew me away because I didn't expect you to do what you did. You started with Revolution, and you just brought the house down. You're also a rocker. I mean, you did that song Revolution better than I've ever heard it done. You did it better than the Beatles did.
That was probably the Revolution Starts Now tour, because I think that was the only time I've done that cover. But the part of rock and roll that interests me anyway is kind of folk music. I think really great hip-hop's folk music, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, you know, I call myself a folky because You know, I come from it being about the songs and it being about the stories, and it does come about a connection to the past. I spend a lot of time driving people crazy. I'm famous for going on and on about how much I know about the history of the neighborhood I live in New York City, even though I've only been there 8 years. And I've been known to go on about it to people that live there a lot longer than I have.
Let me just ask you this before I let you go. You've been pretty open about your past, which included a stint in jail, serious drug addiction, now sobriety. When I talk to you and I sort of hear you talk about your life and what you do, and I get a sense of enormous, I don't know, gratitude from really gratitude about where you've ended up.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to be grateful. I could have been, I don't know why me. You know, I've seen this and still see this disease that I have kill people all the time. And I still deal with it the same way I always have. I go to meetings and I call my sponsor. That's still what I do. That's the biggest part of my life and the center of my life. It is my spiritual system. My spiritual system is still the same as it's been. I believe there is a God, and it ain't me. And I do believe I was spared for a reason. And I'm no longer arrogant enough to think that I'm going to know what it is when I do it. So I just suit up and show up. I just try to be there every day.
Suit up and show up. Words to live by. Steve Earle, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. And I understand you're going to do us one more song, which will play us out on this program. We'd be so grateful to hear it.
This is sort of self-explanatory. It's just about the fact that we're going to have to make some choices in this country and in the world, whether we want jobs, take care of each other, or whether we want bigger and cheaper flat-screen TVs. Burning it down.
I was bored of no limitations, said my goodbyes in the Greyhound station.
That's Steve Earle singing Burning It Down from his brand new album, The Low Highway. He'll be performing this Sunday at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. There's more information at radioboston.org.
Thinking about burning it down, boys. Thinking about burning it down. Nothing's ever gonna be the same.
And that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
Electric matter off my grill and sticking. Say for certain that this thing will blow. But if it does, I'm gonna be the first one to know. And I'm thinking about burning it down.